This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Hello and welcome to the Not Alone podcast. My voice is a little raspier than normal, but I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso. I don't know.
Goodness me. No, we did Ireland last week.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah, this is different.
Hey, everybody.
Hello. It is my turn to be sick, so I am sick this week.
Sam, you've had it like two times in a row now.
I wasn't sick last week.
Not last week, but like you've been sick, and then I was not sick, and now you're sick again. You're skipping me.
No.
It's not fair.
That's true. You need your sickness. So I'll be a little huskier than normal, maybe. I don't know. Maybe not. Jason is feeling grand, I take it.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
I've had a gigantic cup of coffee, and now I'm drinking a Red Bull.
Big old cup of coffee. This week.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I don't know how I feel about that.
This week, we have another of those sorts of hot spots. These places where reality bleeds a little. And we find ourselves surrounded by tales that live somewhere between the real and the unreal. Tales of...
Sure, somewhere.
Shut up. Tales... I'm trying to do a thing. Tales of moon-sized UFOs descending into the woods. Satanic activity.
Like actual moons?
And death shut up without cause. We are in the Clapham Wood. I think Clapham's the only, right? C-L-A-P-H-A-M? Wood?
I've probably just been like Clapham.
Well, I really don't think it's that.
Clapham Wood.
But watch me be wrong.
Clapham.
Clapham Wood.
That's the way I read it.
Clap exactly. Your ham. Okay. I'm going to say Clapham, and I'm probably wrong, but that's okay. So, like I said, this is a place where a lot of different things happen. You don't just have ghosts. You don't just have UFOs. You get a little bit of everything.
And that's a lot of spookernatural per square foot there, too, because it's small.
It's quite small. It's 15 acres.
That's 15 acres. 15 acres. Really? 15?
That's what? It? Yeah.
My childhood home was on a 3-acre plot.
Okay.
It would take you like half an hour to walk through that wood.
Yeah. No, it's not very large.
It's very small.
At all. And that actually adds to the spookiness. But you're right. It has a very high spookernatural per square foot. That's very, yes. So yes. We could probably get a lot for it, you think?
In the spookernatural real estate realm? Yes. Yes. We probably could.
Those people who intentionally buy haunted houses.
We should have an episode just for them.
We should, because on the one hand, I don't know. It's the same thing with like people who buy haunted dolls. It's like, what do you want? What really do you want?
What good can possibly come out of it?
Even if it's all fake.
Is this an,
what do
an
you want?
Investment home?
You want to not feel safe in your house?
Is this going to be a museum? What are you doing? I don't know.
I talked to a guy today who puts houses inside of museums. Isn't that neat? He studies Finnish log homes, Finnish wood.
Like, so are you telling me he deconstructs them and reconstructs them inside of actual museum buildings?
I don't even know that he deconstructs them. I think that he moves them all to the building and then like builds the museum around them.
That seems very counterintuitive.
Yeah. It's up in McCall. We should go sometime. It'd be pretty neat. Cool little.
Yeah. I can't even get you to go to my house.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so Clapham Woods.
Clapham Woods.
And it's not woods.
Wood. I know.
I just messed it up.
I just keep
it's
doing
It's the
that.
Wood. Okay.
It's because you only have like one wood in 15 acres.
Yes.
That's all you can fit.
Yep. There we go. So Clapham Wood. All right. It's situated in West Sussex, which is a county in the south of England. Like Jason said, the entirety of the wood only encompasses 15 acres, but it has more than its fair share of weird and wicked happenings. This place is supposedly built, or not built, but cultivated on top of a druidic initiation or a ceremonial worship site. And unlike last week, where it was just kind of alluded to maybe the druids did something hokey, in Clapham Wood, it is supposedly well known and well accepted that the druidic initiation that went through here and the practices had to do directly with human blood sacrifice, which again is not even sure if druids ever did that, but it's possible. Now, it's unsure whether the druids went to such a place like this instinctively, noting strange phenomena and saying there's something about this place, or if truly all reports of strange phenomena happened after the time of the druids, because again, we don't have a lot of records from those people. But one way or the other, these woods have a predilection to the supernatural. Some other people will say that as opposed to it being the druids in the more prehistory times, you actually had curses that were laid upon the area, one of which was by a man who, it was very strange because the article spoke about the man as if we should know who he is. They just said the man's name, which was like Robert Le Falconer or something.
Falconer, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Cool. And I looked it up and I couldn't find anything about this person, but apparently he like was maimed for life. And he took the man who maimed him to court and was like, look, I can't do anything anymore because it is the 13th century and we don't have the medicine needed for me to live a full and normal life being fully maimed. So I would like to sue this man and not like just be able to be okay. And they were like, absolutely not. Nope. You did this to yourself.
I love the 13th century.
Right. Probably because the other guy was rich. And so this man, Robert Le Falconer, or however you pronounce it, he lays a curse on the woods and on the whole Clapham area. And that's how this manifests.
Is that where it got maimed?
I don't know. Like I said, I could find nothing at all.
What needs to happen is just bulldozed and a little maul.
Okay.
Right over the top of it.
I don't think we should do that. Even if it is haunted.
A skate park.
No, well, that's better.
A haunted skate park. That'd be dope.
That would be pretty good. Now,
in like a little dog area, because apparently people like walking their dogs.
Yeah,
there.
I don't know about that. We're going to get into that here in a second as to why that's probably the worst idea.
Yeah. Okay. But,
now, regardless of an origin story for which we don't have a for sure one, we do know that the first of the bizarre happenings in Clapham Wood in the modern era.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Took place in the 1700s when a woman reported seeing a bright round shape like the full moon float down into the wood. So she says that it's the size and shape of the full moon, but not like actually the moon, right? Like it's like the moon in the sky.
It's how we physically perceive it.
Yeah.
Here, not the actual size. Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure the moon is bigger than 15 acres. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think a few more people would probably notice it.
Yeah. So she sees this, and what I really like about it is that it talks about the shape floating down. It doesn't fall. It doesn't strike. There's no, like, big impact. This floating down thing, it's something that's even attributed to UFOs in the modern time, where people will say when they descend more of, like, a leaf falling in the air, like, side to side. As opposed to just straight down, which, I mean, we don't know for sure, but that kind of seems like what she's saying here.
So they catch some air resistance on their way.
Yes. Now, after this, the woods smelt of a burnt stink. It was also said that the woman came down with a nasty case of palsy. Now, unfortunately, not much is known about this account as it is simply recorded on an old record book somewhere. But some people claim that this account is directly related to a large crater that can be found in the wood.
Oh, it can't be that large.
It can't be more than 15 acres, I'll tell you what. And all the best craters are. So now it's possible.
Trust me, I know. I know a thing or two about craters. I'm a geologist.
Are you a geologist?
Sure.
Or are you just interested in geology?
Nah, dude, I've got training.
Okay, he's a geologist, everyone. What training do you have?
I went to school. I took a geology class.
One geology class?
That's all I needed.
Okay. How much more is there to know about rocks?
Not a lot.
We're sorry to any geologists. Yeah, we may have just offended. Now, it's impossible to say for sure what caused the crater. It wasn't notated really at any point. Some people say that it came after World War II, that it was a result of a bomb. Other people, though, say that it could have been there from this time of the floating moon or even way beyond that. But one thing that is known for sure is that it's been documented that inside of this crater, nothing seems to grow. Much like the area in Socorro, New Mexico, where the Lonnie Zamora sighting took place, or down on the Morro do Ventem, where the Lead Mask mystery was unfurled, these areas that seem to have contact with extraterrestrials do not produce life afterwards. As a geologist, do you think that a bomb would stop vegetation from growing after a certain period of time if it was caused by a bomb?
Not the ones dropped by the Germans.
You don't think so?
No. The ones we dropped in Japan, yeah.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah.
But those bombs weren't radioactive. They're just packed with a whole lot of energy.
Yeah, and like these sorts of reports are coming from the 1970s, typically. So that's 30 years later. I would think vegetation would have grown. But in any case.
That being said, like we don't know anything about the local flora in...
We know there are trees.
South Wessex. Yeah, we know there's trees. And
West,
we know
West Sussex. That,
I'm sorry. So yeah, I don't think it's a bomb that caused the crater to never be.
So you think it was a UFO?
I don't think it was a UFO either.
Then you're wrong.
I'm going to look at pictures of this crater.
You feel free. Look up the crater. I'll keep talking about this.
Son of a gun.
However, the majority of well-documented UFO sightings took place in the 1960s. The wood itself in the surrounding area became absolutely flooded with UFO sightings, and UFO hunters camped out day and night.
Who'd have thought?
Right?
The 60s and UFOs.
Now, reports came fast and frequent, like that of Paul Glover, a member of the British Phenomena Research Group, who was headed into the woods someday in the summer of 1967. Now, it was about 10 p.m. when he and his colleague reported a boomerang. Oh, my goodness.
A boomerang.
Boomerang-shaped object moving quickly towards them. Although it was dark, they were able to tell the size, shape, and trajectory of the completely black object due to the way that it blotted out the stars. The shape was consistent, and its speed seemed faster than a naturally occurring cloud or any kind of animal. They watched it pass overhead and turned to see it, and as they did, two lights appeared elsewhere in the sky. They saw an object come out of one of the lights and then enter the other light and disappear.
Did it look like this boomerang?
No, it did not look like a B2 Spirit.
You sure?
That's American. Why would that heavy bomber be over West Sussex?
Come on, man. We're America. We have stuff everywhere.
And in any case,
we litter.
In any case, we then have right after that, we have this light that opens up, two points of light that opens up. A thing moves from one into the other and then they close. So that doesn't seem like a Northrop Grumman. What? Stop it. It's doing that thing where you put the two fingers, the two circles, and then you interlink them behind your head and it makes it look like it's crazy magic. An hour or so after they saw the lights open and close and appear and disappear, they saw two more lights, this time yellow, which seemed to come out of nowhere and descend into the wood. And then another pair shortly after following the same route, and finally a third and final pair. This is the sort of sighting that took place relatively frequently, especially in the second half of the 60s and the beginning of the 70s. Another anonymous account of an insomniac claims that he saw a saucer-shaped object hovering above the woods at about 2 a.m. He called the police who investigated, but the UFO disappeared by the time that they had arrived a few moments later. Moments, I mean to say minutes, but still pretty dang quick. Now, another interesting account, though, regarding the UFOs has to do with a little bit of a paranormal crossover. I really like these things where we see like one thing seems to be linked to another thing. Like when you see like Bigfoot reports and then there are also UFO reports in the area.
Yeah, and we instantly jump to conclusions.
No, I'm just saying I like it. You're the one jumping to conclusions, that aliens aren't real.
I love patterns. You're right. Patterns are great.
It's gonna be one of those days when I almost killed Jason. Now, an interesting account.
But he won't. An interesting account.
Yet. Regarding UFOs in the wood creates this crossover. Like I said, it also comes from the summer of 1967 and appears to come from theoretically after the account of Paul Glover. Now, this focuses on two young boys from another West Sussex village, that of Rustington. Now, these two schoolboys, I believe this one's name is Tony. It's spelled T-O-Y-N-E. Toyne. Toyne? Is that a British name? Toyne? I'm going to call him Toyne. What do you think?
I'm going to call him Newton.
That's fair. That is his last name, is Newton. And then John Arnold. Now, these two boys were using a Ouija board, like fools. And it spelled out, Jason's shaking his head, what?
Idiots.
Idiots. Idiots. Don't do it. It spelled out Clapham Wood. Now, from there, the Ouija board explained, and this probably took like half an hour for it to move this much, but it
ties as fast as I do.
Yeah. It explained that Clapham Wood was the base of spacecraft, and that these spacecraft had recently been utilized to collect and transfer materials such as sulfur and other chemicals.
Ooh.
The boys claimed to have had no previous knowledge of Clapham Wood in general, and definitely none of the UFO sightings that had happened in the area. However, as happens in these areas, UFOs sometimes can be the least interesting thing. Like, for instance, think about Skinwalker Ranch. I'd say the UFOs there are probably the least interesting thing that happened on Skinwalker Ranch. Same thing with Clapham Wood. But I do like this crossover. What do you think about that? Let's just assume that they're not lying. I want you to take that assumption.
The mini Skinwalkers?
No. Oh, Skinwalkers. I want to do just a scary Skinwalker stories episode. Yeah. Because we talked about Skinwalker Ranch, and we talked about Skinwalkers for like a hot minute.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We didn't talk about...
We want to do a deep dive.
Yeah, why they're so damn scary. So maybe we'll do that soon. Anyway, let's assume that these two boys are not lying.
Okay.
That's pretty interesting. The Ouija board is lying. I like this idea that like somehow a Ouija board, right, that talks to spirits knows about UFO activity.
Right.
It's part of this grand unified theory of the paranormal. The gut pee, as they call it.
Yes. Who calls it that?
I stole that from Astonishing Legends. Okay, they call it that. And I just really think it's interesting. Like, how do UFOs and Ouija boards relate to each
because
other?
Because they are the very... It's just like when Netflix groups together the sci-fi shows and fantasy shows all in, like, one category.
Okay.
You've got the supernatural, and then you got the extraterrestrial. Things that don't necessarily should be intermingling with one another.
Okay.
But tend to get categorized with each other.
But that's Netflix, and I'm talking about maybe real life.
What I'm saying is that these genres do get grouped together quite frequently. So it's not like a far stretch for me to assume that, like, sure, why not?
Okay.
The Ouija board knows things about UFOs. Okay.
Interesting. Demons know about aliens.
I don't know why, but the Ouija board essentially has a grudge against the UFOs, but
telling them all our plans. Well, I mean, beyond that, you of course have that good old fashioned theory that extraterrestrials are demons, or vice versa, depending on what you're looking at.
Oh, good.
So it could be that the Ouija board is being used to contact the extraterrestrials themselves without us knowing it. I would say one day we'll talk more about
Ouija
boards.
Who's the manufacturer
of Ouija
boards? Hasbro.
Yeah. Who would have guessed? It's Hasbro, that takes us in to the next stage of human
development. So in that case, Hasbro has to be controlled by demonic aliens.
Yes, the Illuminati, as it were.
Oh, boy. The Illuminati owns Magic the Gathering.
I can feel myself backsliding into reptilian conspiracy theory mode, and no, I don't want to be there, so let's move forward. Now, the last, one of the last and most interesting reports in the UFOs, because it did die out, the UFO phenomena, it died out in the 70s.
You don't say.
What? Of course it died out, because it didn't, it started, and so if it started, it had to end.
I would just assume it'd end with, you know, the invasion of Earth.
It will, one day. Now, the sightings really died out in the 70s, when, with one of the final reports being that of an unidentified man standing on a nearby hill watching an orange orb.
You missed an R there.
An orange orb descend and then zip away out of the woods after a few minutes. Now, as the 1970s progressed, the phenomena of Clapham Wood did as well. What?
70s, bro. 70s.
It's a progressive time. The phenomena also progressed, morphing into something completely different. That earliest of UFO reports describing the woman and the moon-shaped object ended with an account of her developing a kind of palsy, seemingly in relation to her experience in the wood. Now, likewise, some UFO hunters had claimed that regardless of whether or not a UFO was sighted when they were in the wood, that upon returning from the forest, they would find themselves overcome with a physical sickness, especially an overwhelming feeling of nausea. Within the woods themselves, individuals claim the feeling of being physically touched, usually as a push or as a shove, and mist would be seen rising from the ground and trying to act as a barrier, blocking access to other areas of the wood. If someone went through this barrier, typically they would end up being even more sick, or they would have been feeling fine, and then they go through, and then they feel sick, just until they leave again. So potentially, right, what we're seeing here is it could be that the demons are in the wood, and they are seeing these things happen, and they are trying to take their wood back.
Well, they have to defend it, right? I mean, yes, they're clearly in danger.
Remember, aliens,
their ecosystem is shrinking.
They are no longer the apex predator of Clapham Wood. Remember aliens versus cowboys? Cowboys versus aliens?
Yes.
What if we had, like, aliens versus demons? That would be weird. What would that movie look like?
I don't know until you direct it.
Hey, there we go. Here's the thing. These reports of people getting sick, of feeling sick, like I said, mainly nausea, but other things as well, as we'll kind of talk about here in a moment, it got people worried. It got people talking.
Understand.
And so measurements of the wood were made, and they did result in the discovery that there were higher levels of latent background radiation in the wood than in surrounding areas. However, they're not like astronomically high. They're not high enough to physically affect people in this way. So while that is an interesting part of it, and maybe related to something else, it couldn't be just that. And to me, that says that it's just interesting that you see all of these higher levels of radiation, but not high enough to mess with people. But there are apparently aliens in the area. It's just it's very strange.
Well, I just think it's strange that aliens are always surrounded by radiation for some reason.
Well, if they're using nuclear power sources, wouldn't that give off radiation?
Do you really think
space? Space is irradiated. So,
Sam, we are being constantly bombarded by radiation.
Yeah.
Constantly, by everything around us.
And then these people.
We are radiating, Sam.
These people in their spacecraft come down after being positively soaked up with the radiation of outer space. Or between dimensions, and then they just kind of pop it on the ground there.
So does that mean we have to clean our spaceships after they come back to Earth?
I don't know.
From radiation?
Probably.
The more you know.
The more we don't know.
Exactly. Actually, I don't think they would probably use the same nuclear power we do. Reason being is that weapons grade
uranium.
Uranium is actually only good for making weapons. Like, uranium's really bad for actually using for nuclear power. My brother was actually explaining this to me yesterday. He actually taught me something.
Oh, wow.
Doesn't happen too often, but I forgot what it is. But there's another, the reason why we use uranium for nuclear power plants is because it was lobbied to be a safer alternative.
Mm-hmm.
But there's actually a different material that we could use instead.
Plutonium?
That once it gets shot with, no, I think it starts with a T. Once it gets shot with protons, essentially it creates a cycle where it degrades into to uranium and then goes back to its original form, constantly giving off all this extra energy. And it's a lot more stable than what uranium normally is.
Hmm.
Enriched uranium is, which is the one that gives off a lot of radiation. Normal uranium doesn't do anything to us. It's just when it gets enriched, and then we use it for nuclear stuff.
Bomb. Hmm. Interesting.
And now we're too set in our ways to change our minds. So.
Yeah.
We could have a better, cleaner energy source, but we don't.
All right. Jason's sad now. Now, in the mid-70s, okay. Potentially related to this increased radiation, potentially not. But in the mid-70s, animals started disappearing in the area. The first victim, strangely enough, seemed to be the birds. Now, a local church warden named David Bennett had a particular fondness for nightingales and enjoyed walking in Clapham Wood to take special note of their calls coming through the trees. However, he noticed on multiple successive occasions that there was absolutely nothing to be heard in the forest treetops. Interestingly enough, I actually found, I don't know if they're famous for it or anything, but I found like this document from the 1800s talking about Clapham's nightingales, and apparently they were very beautiful to listen to. And yet, at some point in the 70s, they disappeared. I believe they did come back. But around this time as well, the sicknesses that seemed to be infesting people from the wood really started to ramp up, and whatever dark power residing in Clapham Woods seemed to be growing in strength. Two men were walking when both took ill simultaneously, with their heads feeling as though they were fit to burst. One of the men claimed that it felt as though his eardrums were being pulled out from his ears. That sucks. Now, they tried to make their way out of the wood, and after blind stumbling in pain for about 50 yards, all of their discomfort disappeared as swiftly as it had come. Now, others claimed that the mystery mist had taken to creating forms, with a pair of hikers claiming that they were chased out of the wood by mist that had taken on the form of a bear and come at them.
Oh no, it's like the cloud rhino in James the Giant Peach. Now that was something that plagued my nightmares.
The
cloud rhino from James and the Giant Peach.
I saw that, but it was so long, and claymation used to really freak me out.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And so,
think of a claymation black rhino with lightning.
So, yes, they claim that they were chased out of the wood by this mist bear. Mist bear, which is...
That sounds lovely.
Interesting. I haven't really heard of something like that happening elsewhere. I can't think of any other places or modern accounts of mist or smoke or anything like that creating a form. You hear about mist popping up and coming out of nowhere, and you get lost in it and stuff like that, but not necessarily a creature like itself. But one individual...
Mm-hmm.
This one named David Stringer. He was affiliated with the Southern Paranormal Investigation Group. He was actually the one who took the Geiger counter readings of the radiation in the wood.
So this is of Southern England, right?
Yes.
Not our South?
Nope.
Okay.
Lots of places have a South.
You're right. You're right.
I'd say all of them. Now he claimed...
Wait, no. Wouldn't Antarctica just have a North? I guess,
no. Like, maybe the very, 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 very point of Antarctica.
Yeah.
But other than that, everywhere has a south. Now, he claimed that he saw a large, dark shadow in the middle of the day. It stood about 12 feet tall, and as he started to approach it, a loud shaking preceded the being, and suddenly a large white saucer shot out of the trees and disappeared up into the sky within seconds. The being disappeared as well, however, a footprint remained. It was
just one?
One footprint, not two footprints. One footprint remained. It was four-toed and very large in the area that the shadow had been standing. Some people, I didn't even write this down because I didn't think it was necessary, but now that we're talking about the demons fighting the aliens, some people, I think it was that they saw the tracing, because he traced this footprint, they saw this tracing, and they said that it looked, according to some ancient, not ancient, but like 18th, 19th century book called like the Dictarium Infernus, which cool. is, yeah, which is like a dictionary of demons.
Right.
They said that its foot looked very much like the foot of that of the demon king Asmodeus. So take that how you will. Asmodeus hanging out in the woods.
Fictional. That's how I'll take it.
Well, okay. I mean, however, this, oh wait, no, there's one other thing. And other individuals driving down the road noticed that as they got nearer to the wood, their cars started to veer ever so slightly towards the trees.
I also want that book now.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll find it. We can find you.
It's got to be somewhere, right?
Their cars would veer ever so slightly towards the trees, and they had to intentionally steer their cars away from it.
Are you sure the road wasn't just sloped?
If the road was sloped, then they wouldn't be saying that this was happening, because it would have always happened.
Yeah, a drift towards the trees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They wouldn't just out of nowhere in the 70s been like, hey, my car is leaning towards the wood. And then after that been like, hey, my car's not leaning towards the wood anymore.
Maybe they fixed the roads.
It could be. They may actually have like competent public works over there.
Yeah, whatever that means. Unlike
here. It's ridiculous.
Now, can you imagine?
It'd be a beautiful life. However, the disappearance of animals was not limited to the mysterious absence of the birds. There are documented instances of at least three different dogs, and I'm sorry for this, three different dogs from around this time in the late 70s that had encounters in the wood.
Not the puppers.
Now, the first was of the Love family. That dog was walking off leash, as is common in the wood, with his owner when he uncharacteristically bolted right towards a dense thicket of trees, which, despite a little bit of trouble navigating, he penetrated. The dog owner, son of a local man named Peter Love, waited a few minutes and then called his dog, but the dog did not return. He finally went through the thicket himself and attempted again to call and to locate his dog, but he was unable to find any trace of it. Now, the following week, a collie belonging to a farmer by the name of John Cornford also ran uncharacteristically through that very same thicket, never to return. And finally, a third dog, within weeks of the first two, also disappeared in the wood. Belonging to a Mrs. Rollins, the Labrador dog was enjoying a jaunt through the wood. She let it off leash as soon as she was clear of the main road, and it was enjoying itself immensely. It as well dashed into a thicker part of the wood, not the same thicket, but the same kind of thicket. Thicker part of the wood when it seemed to disappear for a moment. Mrs. Rollins wasn't too concerned at first, but she began to feel more and more anxious as she called for the dog time and time and time again. Finally, after a few tries, the dog did return. However, that evening she noticed that the dog was acting very strangely, limping about, and after a more thorough examination concluded that it seemed to be suffering a paralysis from the middle of its back down through its backside. She called the local vet, who informed her that there was nothing else to do for the animal, and that in his estimation it was only going to get worse. She finally consented to putting the dog down. Afterward, she reported that she had spent many long hours walking through the wood, exploring in the area her dog had gone missing, but was never able to find a cause. Not all animals that were affected by the wood died or disappeared, however. A host of them, who had previously gone walking through the wood no problem, claimed that their dogs were acting just straight up weird for a time. Many dogs seemed to enter into an agitated state as soon as they were in the wood, with the dogs acting needlessly aggressive towards the trees and the empty spaces. Here's the scariest one of all of them for me. One woman claimed that her own dog started circling her. Its eyes was looking wild, and the dog was growling and snarling and foaming at the teeth. She coaxed it out of the wood, and as soon as she did, the dog came back to normal. These sorts of stories, as a man who loves my dog, and as you, a man who should love every dog.
I do love every dog.
They are all good dogs.
They're all the best boys.
It's very sad. Like, it's very sad, but it's again, what sort of a thing could cause this? I mean, the dog being paralyzed, okay. Pesticides, stuff like that. That can mess up a dog, for sure. I find it kind of unlikely, but it's possible. But just these dogs...
See, I would be more into believing that it screwed up, fell, and hurt itself somehow.
Well, but as soon as it... But it. The weird thing about it is that the dog did come back fine. Like, it jumped, it came through, jumped over the hedges or the thicket. It was totally fine. They were happy. And then it wasn't till a few hours later that the dog started acting strangely.
Well, it said she was moving back slowly.
Well, okay, maybe
it was
after
some calls. Yeah. So it could have been that she hurt herself and then
could be
swelling. Other things occurred through time and then paralyzed her.
You said it yourself. It would take no time at all to walk through this wood, and yet we have multiple dogs that just disappear, especially in the same place. Mm-hmm. And it's not like the dogs disappear and then the owners are like, well, guess I don't have a dog anymore. Like, they go through this thicket and they look and they don't find anything at all. It's just plain old spooky. And especially that thing about the woman's dog, like, turning on her and being all scary. Like, I've literally had dreams that Baron, like, attacks me and I wake up crying because I don't want to hurt my dog. He couldn't kill me. Maybe he could. Dachshunds are ferocious.
Yeah,
dude.
I'm sure they are.
But it's just, I just don't know. I just don't know. Got anything you want to say about the dogs?
I mean, well, there's a wide spectrum of things that dogs and animals in general can pick up on that we can't.
All right.
You know, so there might be something weird going on in the woods. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's a demon or a goddess that's angry. Just saying.
But it could be.
There could be something setting the dog off that we're not aware of.
That's fair. I mean, you get your typical, especially when you're looking like mists and shadows and stuff, you get your typical of like naturally occurring infrasound is one of the bigger ideas, because apparently some people believe, and I don't know if it's true or not, but there's the idea that the infrasound, as well as freaking you out, which we know it can do, could also cause like nausea, headaches, things like that. It can, Jason says, and I take his word for it. But can sound make a bear out of mist?
Probably not, but it could probably make you hallucinate.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. Now,
or be paranoid to the point where you're not exactly seeing what you are seeing.
To the point of hallucination. Now, horses as well, though, seem to be affected by this. It is one thing for a dog to go missing and never be found. For sure. It's sad. For sure. It's tragic, but it's believable. However, it's harder for me to picture a full-grown horse just straight up vanishing, but this is what appeared to have happened. One man went to relieve himself in a bush after tying his horse up to a tree, only to come back to find that the horse was completely gone, and there were no prints from the horse or anything like that indicating what way it went. He spent the whole rest of the day looking for it. He put out notices and stuff like that, and the horse was just gone forever.
Dude, someone stole your horse.
I mean, I guess. that could be it. As we'll see as well in a moment, another horse factors prominently in the case of Clapham Wood. However, the wood itself could not be appeased with the disappearances and death of dogs and horses. It needed something more.
Oh, no.
But before we do...
What did it need, Sam?
Before we get to that, we're going to take a brief break for our sponsors.
Oh, no.
Are you hiring? Posting your position to job sites and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for the right people to see it? Well, friends, let me tell you about ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply for your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a high-quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest application you receive so you never miss a great catch. The right candidates are out there, and ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, our listeners can get ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. All you need to do is go to ZipRecruiter.com/alone. That's ZipRecruiter.com/alone. I'm going to say it one more time. One more time, ZipRecruiter, that's ZipRecruiter.com/alone, alone. It's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. You all right?
I am great.
You're doing okay?
Just doing swell.
Something tells me you're not spooked by these wood.
This I'm really wood. Not.
Why? What? We'll talk about it. We'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get there.
I just can't. No, take no, no. It we'll get there. It's a little wood.
It's just because it's 15 acres doesn't mean freaking houses are haunted and they're built on half acre plots.
Sure, they're haunted.
I hate you. Now, in June of 1972, the first of the bodies.
Would Wait, have, how many bodies were there, Sam?
Well, this is the first.
Oh, okay.
There were four, maybe five.
Ah.
Of the bodies would appear in the wood. All right. Now, the body had been missing, or the man had been missing. Remember in Charlie Walton when I wrote it all out as the body?
Yeah.
I don't think that made it in. I think we cut it out. But I originally started and like talked about the body of Charles Walton being found and talking about like the body belonged to a man and the body had been this and the body had done that, like as if life was nothing more than just a body going about. And then without the person in it, the body was nothing. It was very strange. It was unsettling. I didn't like it. It kind of sounded stupid after a while, so I changed it. But here we have the body. The body had been missing since April of that year, and it belonged to a police constable by the name of Peter Goldsmith.
Really? Peter just had this body like in his closet?
The body.
Where was it? Where did he keep it?
The body was a rambler. Which is a delightful word that means someone who likes to walk about the countryside.
So when they say a rambling man.
Yes. It's not just somebody who talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and talks.
But I thought, wow, okay, maybe they do both. No, it could they be. Wander the countryside for someone that will listen to them.
Ah, yes. Tragic. Just like some old Greek myth. Now, the body... The body had disappeared without it. See, that was what it was like, this Charlie Walton episode. So I'm going to drop it now. The man had disappeared, Peter Goldsmith. He had disappeared without a trace while on one of his countryside walks. He had known no enemies, or he had no known enemies, and was not even necessarily assumed dead for the majority of his disappearance. However, his body was found hidden under a patch of thick bramble in the wood. No one was ever arrested in connection to the death, and while the body had decayed, there didn't appear to be any fatal wounds to be found. Now, Goldsmith, in addition to being a policeman, had also been a Royal Marine Commando, so he was definitely not an easy target. The case remains open. 3 years later, another body was found, that of an elderly pensioner named Leon Foster. He had been missing for 3 weeks. However, when his body was found in the wood, the coroner claimed that it appeared to have been decomposing for a much greater amount of time. As with Goldsmith, there was no immediately apparent cause of death. However, this time, unlike with Goldsmith, there was no foul play expected. His body was simply laying there. It wasn't covered. It wasn't concealed in any way to indicate that somebody put it there. But his body...
So wait. The constables, his body was covered?
Covered by a thick bramble.
It's a bramble. Are you just making up words now?
No, I'm making up words. It's like, rambling, it's like a stickery bush, isn't it?
I don't know.
Let's take a look.
Why do you think I accuse you of making up words?
That's fair. Bramble. Pretty sure it's a stickery, thorny bush.
Ouch.
A prickly, a prickly, scrambling vine or shrub, especially a blackberry or other wild shrub of the rose family. So yeah, it's spiky and stuff.
No way, blackberries are part of the rose family?
I have no idea.
That's
I'm just reading what Google is telling me.
That makes sense.
So yes, the first body was concealed, and therefore
I'd believe anything Google tells me. That's a bad thing.
Therefore, the investigators said that there was most likely foul play there. Most likely. With Leon Foster, there was no foul play suspected, but his body was discovered by a couple who was searching for a horse that had gone missing in the wood. This is that other horse I was talking
about. Come on, guys.
Stop losing your horses.
They're big animals. How is this happening to you?
Now, later in 1970, I don't ever think they found the horse either, by the way. In 1978, the local reverend, a man named Harry Neal Snelling, disappeared on his way back from a dental appointment on Halloween of 1978, which just, I read that and I was like, who would go to the dentist on Halloween? And then I remembered that
because
adults
he's got to eat some candy.
I don't think he does.
No.
I think that he's
fix up some teeth for some candy.
Just a boring adult.
Probably.
Who had to go to the dentist and was like, yes, I'm free on Tuesday. Oh, it's Halloween? I had no idea. Life just gets worse from here. Now, he was missing for 3 years until his body showed up in the wood. Mm-hmm. Here's what's really interesting about him. His body was found basically just off the beaten path in an area that had been searched multiple times before. They knew that he would cut through the wood on his way back home. So that was like the first place that they checked. However, the body was discovered by a Canadian tourist who did not alert the police who did not alert the police of their find until they had returned home to their own country. And then he wrote them a letter concerning the body, its location, and even enclosed the priest's credit card as well. There was no...
That doesn't raise any red flags.
Yeah. There was no cause of death identified. No one was ever brought to trial or arrested. I don't know what became of the weird tourist who just... I identify with this person, though, right? Because it's your vacation. You don't want to spend your entire vacation talking to the cops about this dead body that you found. Right?
I can't imagine it taking more than an afternoon. So
you don't know that.
Do they know how old the body was when they found it? Like, was it clear that he was killed three years ago?
It was like skeletal.
Well, I mean,
sorts of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. That's the state at which it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, even the other one should be in a pretty high state of decomposition because of the fact that it's in a wood.
How long? Like, you're talking about a lot of bacteria. Just get stripped of all the flesh.
It depends on where you're
factors,
at.
Factors, for sure.
So, like, the biggest factors are going to be heat, humidity.
Right.
And, like, where, again, like, where you're at, of course.
Okay.
Because, for example, if you were to go missing in the Florida Everglades, Sam, probably never find you again.
Let's go. I'm ready.
Okay. But the state of decomposition just, it varies, of course.
Right.
Between where you are. If you're in a wooded area, it's probably going to be a little bit quicker than, of course, if you were in a desert.
Fair. But how long?
It varies, Sam.
What's the shortest amount of time, would you say?
Oh, man. Probably in the rainforest, it'd take about 4 days.
To just get stripped of all
you
flesh.
You just have bone.
Damn. And what about the longest time?
Oh, dude. Ice, man.
Okay, like, but you're not in the... Okay, let's just say that I died.
Yeah.
Goodbye. I am now in the cemetery. Mm-hmm. How long until all of my good flesh is lost and all I got are these little itty-bitty bones?
No idea. It'd take a long time. Like, for example, the guy that there was a documentary, or I guess a film made Into the Wild or whatever.
Okay.
Where he ate bad berries, poisoned himself, and then died in Alaska. Like, the state of decomposition that his body would have gone through would have been a lot less than like what it would if we were here. Simply because of, again, climate. For like reference as well, like Iceland, there aren't any flies or ants.
Wow.
So
sounds like a nice place to live.
So yeah, right? So when you're looking at something like that, it's a place that doesn't have the very low end of the food chain that does a lot of the decomposition.
The heavy lifting, as it were.
Yeah. So it relies basically on bacteria to do most of the decomposition.
All right, that's fair.
So there's all kinds of factors.
That's fair. Anyway, 3 years.
That's gross.
That's a good amount of time.
Talk about that.
That's a good amount of time for a body to turn into a spooky, scary skeleton.
Skeleton. Yes.
Okay. Now, the final.
In his skull.
Skull. The final suspicious death in Clapham Wood took place in 1981. This is the only one that would ever actually be straight up ruled a murder. It was that of a homeless woman who suffered from schizophrenia. Her name was Julian Matthews, and she was discovered in the wood. Her body showed signs of sexual assault, and it was clear that she had been strangled to death. Now, even though it was labeled a murder and there was a full-blown murder investigation, there was still no suspect. No one ever got arrested. No one ever got taken to trial. And the case remains open and unsolved. Now, according to who you ask, right? The case is unsolved according to who you ask because one man, a paranormal investigator by the name of Charles Walker, he believes he knows just who is at the bottom of all of this. The Satanists.
Okay.
Now,
I'll bite. The Satanists.
The Satanists.
The Satanists killed
the
two or three men and then raped a homeless woman.
Yes.
And then murdered her.
Yes. And also a lot of dogs and some horses.
Because all
and
of that.
All of the nightingales.
Makes perfect sense.
Every damn bird they had. Charles Walker, for better or for worse, he is the foremost authority of the Clapham Wood mystery. He claims that a group called the Friends of Hecate are behind at least the most modern phenomena in the wood. Now, Hecate was a Hellenistic goddess of magic, witchcraft, the night, moon, ghosts, necromancy, crossroads, dogs, and a few other things as well. But she's got a lot. She's got a lot of street cred. Now, she features prominently in Shakespeare's Macbeth as the head of the Weird Sisters, which are the three witches that pretend the rise and fall of Macbeth. She is often seen as a triune goddess. She has three faces and three bodies and three forms, and one of them is a dog. Now, as it is, this goddess, this fragment of the old world, was so fiercely reassigned to the realm of the demonic by Christianity that it's essentially, especially in Renaissance literature and stuff like that, Middle Ages, even before, you have this idea that Hecate is simply the devil. Like, just a female version of the devil. It's not even like with the other gods where it's like, well, Zeus is a silly concept, but he's a god and all of these. Like, she was just straight up the devil. And so when we look at the Satanists and this claim that it's Satanists doing this.
Is it like a connection with, like, the devil taking multiple forms and stuff like that?
I have no idea. Okay. Other than this was the literal deity of magic, right? And mm-hmm. that's gonna mm-hmm. be something that early Christianity is not cool
oh, yeah.
with.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I had friends who couldn't read Harry possible. Potter. So,
yeah.
like, we have that. Now, basically, oh, what was I saying? It is this entity that the Friends of Hecate are said to have served, if they exist at all. Now,
which is, I find odd, because Shrines to Hecate was essentially a way to bless the home from evil spirits.
She was a household god. Yeah,
yeah, she was actually a protector.
Yeah. Like I said,
the warping
they come
that
in,
has been created.
They come
over the,
in and they take our gods and they throw them away. They're not my gods, but they
first
change
they
them.
Rough them up.
They rough them up a bit. Now, it's said by Walker that specifically the sacrifice of dogs, which he claims far outpaces the two missing pups and one paralyzed doggo that came out of the wood. He claims that there are dozens, if not hundreds, of dogs that have gone missing in and around Clapham Wood. And this practice of dog sacrifice has indeed been linked to Hecate since ancient times, as dogs were considered sacred to the goddess. She always appeared on the pottery and the stuff with, or however, the murals with dogs. She was always flanked by dogs.
Oh my gosh, Sam.
She's
the perfect
she's
woman.
She's down with it. Yeah, she loves those dogs. And the
she's my soulmate. Witchcraft,
this goddess
magic,
of witchcraft
and likes dogs.
That's yeah, totally the kind of person.
Hit me up, Hecate. Let's do it.
You could be invoking some really serious things here, Jason.
She's a protector.
She was a protector. Now she's pissed, and rightfully so. Now, by the act of sacrificing a dog to Hecate, it afforded her even more dogs to hang out with in the afterlife or the eternal realm or
Dope.
Whatever. So, like, I can understand that. I don't think we should be killing dogs, but
instead of all dogs go to heaven, it's all gods go to Hecate.
All dogs go to Hecate. I like that. Yes.
Aw.
It's quite
it's nicer
nice,
now, isn't it?
But I do wish that my dog went to heaven with me. Who knows? We'll know when we get there. Anyway. What was I going to say? In the early 20s.
No idea.
In the early 20s, an obscure cult that we might look at one day when we want to illustrate that man's inhumanity to man is indeed the realest monster of all lore style, the Blackburn cult in L.A., practiced dog sacrifice in the name of Hecate. They also attempted to resurrect dead children. And so, like I said, it's not great stuff in that area. Very interesting. This person believed, as often happens in these cults, that they had received more revelation from God, and they knew more things about God, and then also that the angel Gabriel like taught her math and science and the arts and stuff like that, and it all culminates with her stealing like $28,000 and burying a dead teenager surrounded by seven mummified dogs, and then the government was like, this is too much, we need to,
that's intense,
this is something else, man.
How'd she mummify them?
I have no idea. This was cursory research. I just saw it and I was like, oh my gosh. So we might talk about that.
Let's not talk about that
if
right
anyone
now.
Is interested, that's the Blackburn cult. They were out of LA, so something to look at. But this cult also practiced and also worshipped Hecate, and for Walker, this is especially poignant and potent, because for him, this all began with the dogs. He really, like, he cared about the UFO sightings for sure, but he truly found himself like motivated to look for answers when these dogs started going missing. And at first he believed the disappearing dogs and then possibly the reappearing corpses were directly related to the UFO phenomena. However, as time went on, he became less and less and less sure. He finally began to uncover stories of disappearing animals and dark, oppressive feeling in the wood that predated the UFO flap of the 1960s. And when he did, he was so frustrated by this development that he put a call out through the press inviting anyone who knew anything to come forward and aid his investigation. Through this, he claims, he discovered that there was an insanely high amount of dog disappearances in the wood, as well as their cause. Now, a telephone call comes in. Says, you want to know about these dogs? He says, oh boy, do I. something like that.
Oh, boy, do I.
Oh, boy, I do. And the man says, okay, I'm going to tell you about these dogs, but you have to meet me. It's like dark already. It's like 10 o'clock at night, I'm guessing.
In the wood.
You have to meet me in the wood in half an hour at the crossroads, right? And the crossroads, apart from all the other things that is in devil worshiping literature and satanic and all that, it is actually the literal place where the dogs disappeared, is the crossroads. That's where the thick thicket is. So he says that he had received other claims like this and other offers, but none of them seemed sincere. And yet somehow through this little minute, 2 minute conversation on the phone, he said that this individual seemed extremely sincere. So he hopped on his bike because that's how he gets around everywhere. He loves to bike, and he pedals his way out to Clapham Wood. He gets there in time, and then he just kind of waits. And he waits and he waits and he walks up and down and he's looking around and he thinks, ah, I'm a fool. This is stupid. How did I ever think this was going to work? And he finally, out of frustration, says, hey, is anybody out there? And he receives a call and response coming from the same thicket of trees that the dogs had disappeared into, never to be seen again. And the voice was the same as had previously spoken to him on the phone. It was this voice that explained what was happening here. A group known as the Friends of Hecate had chosen the woods as their sacrificial grounds 30 years previous in 1948. Their meetings took place once a month, but without a set schedule, or so it would seem to any outsider. Charles began asking questions of the voice, but it did not respond. He didn't hear the other person leave, but reckoned that he must have gone due to the way that he just stood there in silence forever. But finally, the voice told him one last thing. He should stop his inquiries here and now. The members of the Friends of Hecate were comprised of very powerful people, and they would stop at absolutely nothing to protect the identities of their members and the regularity of their sacrifices. However, Charles did not heed this advice. He personally, as well as other contacts and cohorts of his in the area, went about asking about these Satanists and this cult activity in the woods, and they ran into what I like to call the Charlie Walton effect. Just like Inspector Fabian encountered when investigating the death of Charles Walton.
Oh man, you remembered his name.
I did. I didn't even have to look it up. Good I job. Almost did. But Fabian is such a good name. He sounds like a detective inspector. Just the same way that Fabian had been met with tight-lipped silence and even kind of hostile responses when asking about the cult activity in regards to the Charlie Walton death, so too did Charles Walker and his cohorts throughout the Clapham area. Everybody seemed a little testy, a little on edge. And to that I say, it's probably because you're trying to accuse them all of witchcraft.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really
and
not.
And if we haven't learned anything about England, you don't accuse someone of witchcraft.
Yeah, they seem to be a very private people.
Yeah.
They don't really like to share things, I would say. I don't know.
You bottle it up.
And
then you eventually die.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
It never even gets a release, really. It's sad.
That's why they drink so much tea.
Uh-huh.
And eat biscuits and call french fries chips.
I don't know if that's a side effect of like emotional neglect is calling french fries chips, but it's possible. In any case, in 1979, Charles Walker, thank you, uncovered what he believed was a satanic meeting place.
Finally. It's only 15 acres. How'd it take you so long?
Well, it wasn't necessarily in the wood itself, because the voice and other people that he had talked to over the years said that their meetings took place in the wood or alternatively in another area if weather was bad. So sometimes you want to worship Hecate, but you just don't want to get wet.
England, I'm sure the weather is usually bad.
Usually not great. So he found what he believed to be this satanic meeting place in an old abandoned manor house that was near the Clapham Village Church. He had found a mural of a horned figure standing amidst vivid flames.
However, that doesn't seem quite right. She doesn't have horns.
Right? Well, I mean, you get this whole idea of the horned god. Remember that lady we talked about with Charlie Walton? The one talking about the witch cult and talking about how, like, there was another I can't remember really. We're going to talk about her more when we talk about Bella and the Witch Elm. But this whole idea that just like Christianity grew up and invaded Ireland and Scotland and England, so too did this witch cult, and that they existed side by side, but then after the fact, they were stricken from literature and from history and all of that. And it's that kind of a being, this horn being that they worshipped, and that's why we have that idea of the devil. So weird,
because horns evolved for defensive purposes.
I don't think that has absolutely anything to do with the conception of the devil.
Why are they always so evil?
I don't know, man.
That's what I just don't get.
I don't know. Now, this, however, was the closest he could come to physical proof of the cult's existence, at least at that time. Now, a few years later, Walker teamed up with Toyne. Remember Toyne? Tony?
Sure. Yeah.
Toyne Newton. The young boy who had received the Ouija board message years before. The two began to write a book on the cult called The Demonic Connection. Now, part of the center idea of the book and the evidence for the cult is a letter that was actually received by Toyne Newton, and they published it in the book itself in 1987. Now, this letter had claimed to have been written by a disenchanted member of the Friends of Hecate. This individual noted that the dead individuals that showed up in the wood were also victims of sacrifice, and they even claimed that Goldsmith, the supposed first victim of sacrifice, was actually investigating another death, another sacrifice, this one of an unknown young woman, when he was abducted and sacrificed himself. That's why I said there are four, maybe five.
Well, that wraps itself up with a nice little bow on top, right? Doesn't it?
Right? Now, in any case, Walker and Toyne both claimed that after what was known as the Great Storm of 1987, in which a freak windstorm killed 20 people and wrecked the wood, which was square in its path, that the cult seemed to have stopped or at least moved its activity away for a time. Now, according...
What the heck, Hecate?
What the heck, Hecate, indeed. Because they lost all the trees. They couldn't be sacrificing people without trees.
Yeah, she probably got tired of it. Like, what are you doing this in my name? Get
this sucks.
Shoot.
This is the worst sacrifice ever. According to it Walker, as far as I know, Toyne, like the beginning and the end of it for him was that 1987 book. However, Walker, according to him, he says that evidence of satanic activity continues to show up in the wood. He's found candle ends and animal parts along with satanic imagery, such as pentagrams carved into the trees. And as much as it's hard for me to take him completely seriously, other independent sources do back up some of Charles's claims, especially when it comes to the animals. A pet detective agency in the area stumbled on a pit full of dead cats and especially dogs, and a hide or...
No way, they got Jim Carrey out there. Huh?
Right?
Great.
That'd be the worst pet detective move. Can you just imagine Jim Carrey being zany and then coming across like a pit of dead animals? And he's just like, oh my God. And then he like throws up off screen.
Jim Carrey is never funny ever again.
Exactly.
So yes. Broke him.
Yeah. So you do have like... supposedly, external verification that there are a lot of dead animals in these woods that shouldn't be. There's also a hide, which they use to mean a secret place, that was discovered. And inside of it are black candles. Really? What?
A hide. Yeah. A secret place.
Well, I thought they meant an animal hide. Like, I've never heard it used that way before. I was like, what the heck is a hide? You mean a deer skin? But so this hide is discovered. There's black candles, upside down crosses, dead crows, voodoo dolls, all these sorts of things. Right.
Yeah, but is there a statuette with three women on it?
I didn't find anything, actually. They didn't find a Hecate statue. I didn't find anything about a Hecate statue in that. And it's hard to say, you know, it's the same sort of thing that we were looking at the very beginning with the Druids. Did the Druids use this place, if the Druids use this place, did they do it because there was already something mysterious about it? Or as in, did this cult come here because the druids had been there before? Or because the druids were there, did people start thinking it was mysterious? As in, because Charles Walker is convinced there's a cult, did somebody put cult stuff out there to mess with him or decide it's a good place for a cult? Who knows?
I don't know, dude. I did see pictures of some kids mountain biking.
Oh, nice.
In that wood. So, you know, they might be up to trouble.
It's not, you know, the well, I don't think the kids are Satanists. That doesn't seem right. The
have you seen those Thrasher t-shirts? You never know.
It is bad. These other, all of the other events beyond the Satanists had a lot of external verification. It was the talk of the town. It was actually in newspapers, things like that. The Satanists have only been pursued by Walker and Toyn Newton. However, it does appear that just like they said that the Satanists were driven out with the Great Storm of 1987, that seems to be for the most part the end date of the rest of it as well. The mist, the sicknesses, the animals disappearing, UFOs and all of that, with one or two exceptions, one of which you actually found there. There's like a person on the internet. I'm going to link to it. And it basically, they claim that their son or their neighbor's son was playing with their camera playing with their neighbor's phone and taking pictures and doing all that while his mother was out of the room doing something downstairs. And then she comes back up. She says, okay, give me back my phone, and then goes to bed and that. And then she doesn't check the camera for a long time because it's just something the kid's doing. And as she goes back, she sees this figure that's standing in the doorway. And I don't know, man. It's enough to spook me. It's
very spooky. It's a shadowy figure.
It's a shadowy figure.
You can't, like, make out the face at all.
It could totally and 100% just be a person and a complete hoax all the way around for sure, but I don't know. I look at it and it scares me, which is not something that really happens to me that much anymore, looking at pictures of supposed ghosts, because I've looked at a lot of supposed ghosts by this point. One time Rob told me that, like, because, you know, Rob's been a paranormal investigator and, like, he's gone out to ghost scenes and stuff like that, and one time he said something along the lines of, like, because one of our friends at work was worried that his new house was haunted because he took a picture and there was an orb in it. And so we all had to explain that, like, it's just a dust particle reflecting light and all of that. But I, like, sent it to Rob and I was like, what do you think of this? And he said something along the lines of, like, usually if there's something actually spooky in the image, there is a response that people have. Your body just responds in a certain way. When I look at this image, I don't have any sort of a response. Neither do you, neither does your friend other than the initial. And I always thought that that was really, really strange and kind of, I hate to say it, kind of silly. But now I know that much like with everything else Rob has ever told me in my life, he was right and I was wrong. Because when I looked at that image, I was like, this is spooky. So we'll link to that in the show notes. But really, that's like the last thing. And that was like in 2007, I want to say that picture was taken, okay. Later. That picture was taken and all of that. However, Walker claims that this saga of satanic activity is ongoing. He claims that he's had guns pulled on him by random people in the street. He's almost been ran off the road in the middle of the night by shadowy figures in cars. And according to an interview that he gave in the year 2002.
He might need a new hobby.
I know, right? It's not healthy. According to an interview that he gave in 2002, he still spends every day, and granted, this is 16 years ago.
So you can say it's his K9 to 5?
What?
It's K9 to 5.
What does that mean?
Like, what's your 9 to 5? Your job.
Okay.
It's a K9 to 5.
Because it's a dog?
Because there's dead dogs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't really putting it together there for a second. That's still interesting. Anyway, thank you. This was 16 years ago, but I choose to believe it's still true. I did find his website. It had a little bit there. It had been updated fairly recently, though. So it's probably still true that he spends each and every day, all day, trying to expose the cult poking around, he sets up vigils in the wood month after month, and he says he'll continue to do this until the day he dies or the day he exposes them, whichever comes first.
Again, it's 15 acres.
And to how you, I say, Charles this? Walker, bravo.
How have you not surveyed every last inch of the wood yet?
If you're not, if they're not sacrificing dogs when you're surveying, like, it's not like a static thing.
They should probably have an altar of some sort.
He's found pentagrams carved into, like, tree stumps and stuff.
Sam, why don't we go outside and just drop a pentagram on your tree?
But that's the problem, Jason. Can. You're asking Anyone for can. An altar. You're asking for an altar. I'm telling you there might be an altar, and then you're telling me that it's just some kids dicking around in the woods, which is probably all that it is. But we have to say that he has at least circumstantial evidence.
Okay.
I know, it sucks.
You're right. There might be something going on.
There, like, the idea that there is absolutely no satanic activity taking place in the world is not true. There are people. Like, every Halloween, there's, like, a public service announcement about people, like...
people being dicks.
People being jerks. And like, I cannot tell you how many PSAs I've read about, like, keeping your black cats in on Halloween because people are messed up. Like, the problem in this is not that people are messed up. I will give that to anybody and everybody and all of that. But I don't think, personally, I don't think that Satanists can cause an area to be haunted. I just don't think that's how that works. I mean, I could be wrong, but at the same time, I do believe that there was something weird in these woods. Everybody who's gone to them since, like, all of the bloggers and all of that are like, oh, they're beautiful and there's nothing weird at all. And it's like, okay, that's fair, but we don't have a lot of, like, just common man records from 1987. All of the records you're going to have are from super skeptics or super believers. Enthusiasts. Yeah. You're not just having people who are like, oh, yes, that's my home wood.
Right, right. You don't
and
have
talk about it.
Your control group.
Right. Except for the stories of the witnesses, the people, the hikers, the dog walkers and stuff like that. And who knows for sure, but I'd say there's definitely something going on because these woods are not big enough to lose two horses and three dogs in.
That's
it's too small.
Absolutely fair. I also think it's really silly if you are a satanic cult and you're abducting dogs literally like within 300 feet of where you sacrifice them and is your holy shrine and relic.
I mean, I'm not here to give Satanist advice.
I am.
But you should probably go elsewhere and really create. It's like that same thing, like, you know, the best way to commit a murder. Now I can't
Have absolutely no attachment to
have
who
no motive
or
no,
the location you're doing it.
You basically just show up, kill somebody, and go somewhere
and
else.
And buy all your equipment from Walmart.
Yeah. Don't do that, though. And I've never done that. So this can't be used against me in a court of law. Okay. But it is. That's what you got to do if you want to sacrifice these dogs. But please don't, because that's super messed up. I can't believe we're even talking about this.
Yeah, if anything to do to cats.
No.
I'm kidding. It's a joke. It's
very
a joke.
Good.
I just think dogs are better. I'm a dog person. I'm sorry, everyone.
I love them both. I've had cats. I've had dogs. I love them both.
I have allergies. That's what I have.
I've had cats. I've had dogs. He's had allergies. Are you allergic to dogs?
Cats.
You're allergic,
I'm allergic
to, cats.
To cats.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's why you don't want a cat.
And they're kind of dicks.
That's okay.
I like, you know what I love? I love coming over here and Baron just like flipping out in excitement that I'm visiting.
I know. He's truly a good dog.
A cat never does that to me.
I gave my grandparents my cat because I at a time in my life I had to move back in with my parents for like a few months. Mm-hmm. And even though it was only going to be for like 2 or 3 months, my dad was like, you cannot bring your cat. You just can't. So I gave my cat to my grandparents. That cat doesn't give a crap about me. I go and visit them, or now her grandma. And like anytime I'm over, if I see the cat at all, it just looks at me and then walks away. And I'm like, I raised you. When I found her, she was just this big. This is a little dude. We actually rescued her from, like, I was working at a coffee shop. Here you go, everybody.
Here we
go. Let's just get off track. I was working at a coffee shop, and it was a drive-through coffee stand. It's Dutch Bros for anybody who has one. And I looked out the window at the next incoming car because it had been empty, but I saw someone pulling into the parking lot, and I looked, and there's this tiny little ball of fur and just sitting right where the car is going to go. And so I like stick out my hands. I jump out the window and the people in the car are like, what the hell is going on? And am I going to get killed by this Dutch Bros guy? And I like point and I'm like, there's a cat. And this tiny little kitten gets so spooked, rightfully so, and runs across like four lanes of rush hour traffic and makes it all the way to the other side of the street. And before I even know what's happening, the person that I'm working with has also jumped out of his window, and he just runs. And you just hear like cars honking and brakes and yelling and cursing and swearing because he's just running across traffic. He does not care. And the cat then goes and hides underneath the car of a guy at the liquor store. And my buddy is underneath the car like trying to get the cat. And the guy comes out and he's like, what the are you doing to my car, man? He's like, no, there's a cat. There's a cat under here. And the guy was like, oh, no. And so they both worked together to get the cat. And then I took the cat home and I love the cat. And that cat doesn't care about me at all. So maybe you're right. Maybe cats do suck. But I love that cat so much.
I think I proved a point.
I just had like a really cathartic experience. You did. Anyway, so, but still don't kill cats. Like that's just shitty. No.
Don't kill animals in general.
Yeah, just what's don't wrong be a jerk. With you? Anyway, Jason, you seem to not be enthralled by this whole haunted wood at all. What are you thinking?
I want to go camping. On? What do you want to do?
What do you think about the mist and the vertigo and the nausea and the all of that? Tell me what you want.
Tell me what I want, what I really want. I honestly think it's mostly in people's heads. Yep, I went there. I think it has a lot of our imagination getting better of us and being creeped out by something that we don't see every day.
But a lot of these people did see the wood every day. They saw the mist. They went through it. They walked around. It was a gay old time.
Well, you should have put that in the notes.
Well, I mean, just to say that, like, it was a common place. People went there. It was a wonderful place for a nature walk. And
I
like
also
that.
Think in 15 acres, you can't hide anything.
I disagree.
That's fair. And
you can hide a lot.
Obviously, you can.
Yeah, obviously they can because there are missing dogs and horses. There are craters that we're still not really sure about at this point. Thank you very much. All right. Well, fine. Jason hates the woods.
No, I love the woods. I'm just not, you know, too sure about the wood.
The wood itself. Well, there's that. So if you hate that, you're really going to hate next week's episode where we talk about goat men. That's right. We're going to talk about men who are goats.
Satyrs?
Kind of.
Are we talking about Tumnus?
Tumnus, Mr. Tumnus. But other than that, that's all I have
for
this
week. Wait.
What?
What's your take? What's going on in the woods
here? My take is that we have something going on in the woods
here. But what?
I don't know.
Is
ghosts.
It demonic?
Yeah, probably. Spirits of some kind.
Man, dude, I just think pagan religions get a bad rap.
Yeah, no, they totally do. But I'm not even saying it's the pagans that did it. There's something about this area. You can't tell me. I can understand hallucinations and being freaked out and stuff like that. You can't tell me that two people hiking in the woods are going to see the mist turn into a bear and then chase them, and that's just all in their heads. There's got to be something going on here. And like I was saying, really what it comes to is that it is a magic sort of thing. It really is, because there's nothing else that I've heard of that has to do with ghosts or with mists forming into animals other than like weird magic. This is also the part of the world, not exactly, but near the part of the world where the movie Brave takes place. And there are witches and bears galore in that movie. Okay.
Okay.
Even if it's in Scotland, that's the same continent. Okay. Or the same little island.
I guess, no, it's the same continent.
It is also the same continent.
You're not wrong.
I don't.
Gosh, I don't feel you're right.
That's fair. I don't I honestly cannot say that it's just in their heads or it's just this or that. The only other thing that it could be is something like infrasound. But even then, the infrasound doesn't make dogs disappear. Like, it doesn't make it can give you nausea, headaches, stuff like that. But
if it makes the animal freak out into a panic enough, then they run away without us being able to keep up with them or keep track of them.
Yeah, but even then, the issue seems to stop as soon as they leave the wood. As soon as they're out, they're back to normal.
Here's the thing. The only testing that's ever been done in the woods is just for radiation.
Yeah, it was just a Geiger counter.
Yeah, that doesn't help us whatsoever. There could be a plethora of other things actually going on.
Let's not downplay that. It does help us a little bit. We know that somebody looked at it with a Geiger counter.
Because they're trying to prove or disprove whether or not UFOs are there. But they don't have... No one's gone through there with the equipment to do anything else with it. Like, we just don't know. Literally, like, there's just so many other possibilities than being, oh, I don't know what's going on. Thus, it has to be supernatural.
Right. Right. But sometimes bear mist chases people out. And to me, that's supernatural. 100%. So that's me.
Well, that is you, Sam.
I choose to believe.
In the bear mist.
In the bear mist.
Bear myth. Mist prophecies.
Mist. Ooh.
I mean,
ooh,
cool.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what else?
That's it, man. I guess let us know what you guys think.
Yeah, we'd love to know what you
think. If you live there, go with a camera. I want to watch things.
Yeah, like take something to record sound.
Go explore.
If you have like some good sound equipment and you just want to pick up like some late background noise, that'd be pretty dope, actually. Please
do that.
That'd
be super sweet.
Beyond that, give us your take. Yes, please. Give us your take. Beyond that, we've got just a few things here. We'd like to thank our new patrons. So we'd like to thank Leandra Brahmam.
Leandra.
We'd like to thank Shannon Abel.
Shannon.
We'd like to thank Nick Lewis.
Nick.
We'd like to thank Maya Prado.
Maya.
And we'd like to thank Jared Brock. Thank you, Jared. Good. We were really out of sync on that one.
Oh, yeah, so that was good.
Guys, supporting.
You were trying really hard to be out of sync.
I was being active. Guys, supporting the show like that is just. It's amazing to us. It is truly astounding that people give to us like that every month, and we are so humbled by it. Thank you guys so much for everyone who contributes that way. It is a fantastic way of supporting the show. For as little as $3 a month, you can get the episodes a few days early. You can get stupid uncut versions where we tell dumb old jokes and we ramble a lot more, which I guess some people like.
Because we're rambling then.
Well, rambling man. But yeah, at the end of the day, like I've said before, it really comes down to you understand that work goes into this, you get value out of it, and so you want to give value back. And we're so grateful for that. And if you can't donate, we understand. We're not saying this to guilt anybody. We just really want to let our patrons know we appreciate them. So beyond that, we also have a few new podcast reviews. So we'd like to thank Jorbug 86, Dr. Pi Ness, and Salix 84. We're going to listen, or we're going to read Salix 84's. They say, muy bueno. Excellent
Lies.
Podcast. Hey now. Excellent podcast that tackles very obscure topics that I've never listened to before. And I was very excited when they discussed the chupacabras, since I'm Puerto Rican. Very excited to keep listening since I've been binge listening. So thank you so much. I don't understand why someone would want to listen to my voice for, God forbid, an hour at all. But what?
Someone loves the chups.
Someone loves that chupas. Well, chupa is just a goat. Or what? No, chupa means sucker.
Sure. Right. Yeah, I have sucker. No idea.
Somebody loves those cabras. What's a goat? Is a goat cabra? What the flip?
I don't know.
I have no idea. Anyway, guys, thank you. Thank you for those reviews. They're very kind. Another wonderful thing you can do to support the show beyond sponsoring us, leaving us reviews, is you can go to our sponsor, that's ZipRecruiter.com/alone, and just letting them know that their ads are well-directed and that they should definitely keep buying ads on this program. That would be fantastic. What else? Anything else?
I think that's it, Sam. I think that makes it a wrap today.
That's gonna wrap it up. My name is Sam, as you may know. You can find me...
Sam. Sam, you are.
Sam, you am. You can find me on Instagram.
Sam, kind on the gram.
I haven't... Sam on the gram. Nice. I should actually change my personal Instagram to that. I think I will. I actually have not posted on the show Instagram in weeks. But if you want to, you can still try to follow us on Instagram. It's Not Alone Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, Not Alone Pod. Or that's me. Jason, what's yours?
Mighty Moit.
Mighty Moit. You can go
to... I think you get more joy out of saying than I do.
I love Mighty Moit. You can go to notalonepodcast.com. You can email us at notalonepodcast@gmail.com. You can join our Facebook community. Remember, you are not alone, a community for the strange. You can like us on Facebook. You know what to do. You know how to do it. So you're smart, capable people. Other than that, we're going to be back next week talking about goat men. So that'll be fun. Yeah. But keep at me if anybody has...
Sounds all bad.
Bad. If anybody... No. If anybody has...
That's what's going
to
happen.
Spooky stories or anything like that, get at us. We'd love to hear your spooky stories. Especially if you have ideas for topics, things like that, send them over to that notalonepodcast@gmail.com. Beyond that, who did it last week?
I did. It was
you did?
Yeah.
Like, I thought
oh,
I
man,
did.
That was a good one.
Okay. Remember, whether you find yourself observing a moon-sized object descending into the wood, or are being chased by a bear constructed of mist and shadow, you are not alone.